Welcome to Social Distance Central. Wait, that's what this is now? You're on Sportsnet 650. Here's Bick Nizar and Brendan Batchelor.
Good afternoon, 12:01. Welcome to Social Distance Central. Brendan Batchelor back with you, joined this week by Jamie Dodd, in for the vacationing Bick Nizar, and we do have a jam-packed show for you here today. We are, as always, taking submissions for Game of Takes this week, so get those in before Wednesday. We will be choosing someone to go up against our defending champion, Jordan from Saskatoon, in Game of Takes. That'll take place here on the show on Thursday, and we got into it a lot yesterday, Jamie, but the topic this week is Tyler Myers and his first season with the Vancouver Canucks. So go to Sportsnet 650 on Twitter, at Batch Hockey, at Jamie Dodd. Let us know your thoughts on Tyler Myers and his first season in a Vancouver Canuck uniform. We're also going to be joined by Sportsnet's triple threat, Ian McIntyre, just after 12:30. So we'll get into a lot of the hot topics around the National Hockey League with IMAC, including the Hall of Fame class, which is being selected here in the next 24 hours or so. And we should learn tomorrow who is going to be in the 2020 class for the Hockey Hall of Fame. And the Hub City conversation has moved forward another step as well. But first, Jamie, how's it going today?
I'm doing well, Batch. How you doing, man?
Yeah, pretty good. Can't complain. You know, somewhat nice to see from the perspective of someone that wants the NHL to come to Vancouver, that Hub City list has been trimmed down yet a little bit more today. Vancouver, one of the handful of cities that is still in the running right now. Pittsburgh's out of it. Dallas is out of it. And it appears it's down to Vancouver, Edmonton, Toronto, Chicago, LA, and Las Vegas.
And from that list, even, I mean, everything we're hearing suggests it would be a very, very big surprise at this point if either Los Angeles or Chicago was picked. And, you know, we talked to Sportsnet's insider Chris Johnston on Reach Deep yesterday afternoon, and the way he was talking, you know, it sounds like, at least in his mind, Vancouver is nearing lock status. So I think, you know, Batch, you and I are both in favor of the NHL coming here. I know some people are on the other side, but I think wherever you stand, it's time to start getting comfortable with the idea that, yeah, the NHL in, you know, a matter of a few weeks could be descending on Vancouver here, because all signs are pointing in that direction right now.
You can contribute to the show by texting 650-650 again on Twitter, at Sportsnet650, at Batch Hockey, at Jamie Dodd. Let us know your thoughts on Tyler Myers for Game of Takes, or whether you're happy that Vancouver is going to be a hub city, we believe anyway, for the NHL, as it looks like it's going that direction. And a good piece by our good friend Patrick Johnston in the province today, talking about UBC and the fit in that facility as part of Vancouver's hub city proposal. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense, and it was something I hadn't really thought about a lot. You know, when thinking, oh, UBC would be an option, I was like, oh yeah, they've got Thunderbird Arena out there. But you forget that that's a bigger athletic complex than at least I was remembering, just what I was sort of, you know, having thoughts about. Okay, if they're going to have a practice rink, where is it going to be? They've got the big rink at UBC. They've got Father David Bauer Arena. They've got a third rink in there as well. So you've got three sheets of ice that teams could be practicing on in one facility, and then enough dressing rooms to accommodate every team. You know, if you've got 12 of the 24 teams that are playing that have to be in the same area here for, you know, at least a couple of weeks anyway, once you get the play-in rounds over with, you know, four of those teams would go home and there'd only be eight left from there on in. But, you know, obviously Rogers Arena would be where you play the games, but UBC, with the number of dressing rooms and ice rinks it has, is something that, you know, I don't think necessarily a lot of other cities on that list might have in terms of an attractive setup where you could have all the teams in one place.
Yeah, and there's been so much, you're right, Batch, there's been so much focus on the kind of the quality of the city, the entertainment factor of the city, right? And, oh, Vancouver's such a nice place. Who wouldn't want to be here?
And yeah, we're going to talk about Edmonton in that regard.
Well, exactly. But at the same time, you know, that's not the most important thing because these guys aren't going to be out and about enjoying Vancouver. They're going to be really tightly in that bubble. And the stuff that you don't think about off the top of your head right away, all the things that you're mentioning, the number of dressing rooms in a practice facility, you know, the quality of the practice facility in general, that stuff becomes really important. And I think you're absolutely right that the UBC facility, and, you know, don't forget the UBC, that rink hosted women's games when the Olympics were here. It's proven that it can play a role in big major events. So I think all of those little things add up is what has put Vancouver in such a strong position to be able to host games.
And again, we are expecting to hear officially the hub cities this week at some point. We are expecting, based on reports, that it's likely going to be Vancouver and Las Vegas, although we've seen some COVID cases spiking in Nevada. So there is still a possibility that that could change. We are going to get into the Hall of Fame discussion in a little bit here, but I do also want to touch on Edmonton and this video that was making the rounds on Twitter yesterday. And, you know, people have had a lot of fun with it, especially people in Canuck Twitter. So for those of you that don't know or haven't seen it, the Premier of Alberta, Jason Kenney, tweeted out a promotional video, you know, talking about why Edmonton would be a great choice to be a hub city. He says it's an obvious choice to bring the NHL to Edmonton. But this promotional video legitimately has one shot of Edmonton in it, and it's the opening shot, which is a night skyline with some text over it that reads playoffs in Edmonton. So, you know, that is the opening shot of the video. You're like, okay, they're going to, you know, promote, you know, the great arena they've got and the facility and the hotel setup that they have there in this video. And instead it talks about, you know, come play in the Rockies. And I'm like, well, you know, Edmonton's not exactly in the Rockies, is it? And then there's, you know, these beautiful panorama images of wonderful Rocky Mountain scenery for the rest of the video. And not one shot of Edmonton at all, which, you know, I understand that Jason Kenney is trying to pump up that, hey, Alberta's a beautiful place. But, you know, for any NHL players that are going to this hub city set up in Edmonton, if indeed it's chosen, like, I can speak from experience. The area that they are going to inhabit is like a square block of the city. And, you know, all the hotels are attached to the rink by an indoor walkway. They're not going to be seeing mountains. They're not going to be seeing beautiful lakes. They're not going to have the opportunity to experience a ton of the summer weather in Alberta. So I thought that was kind of funny. I'm not sure what your reaction was.
Well, it was, yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, they're not going to be taking, you know, helicopter trips to Banff for Jasper for the weekend in between games. That's just not going to be happening. And that was what Jason Kenney chose to highlight. I would love to see someone put together like a real Edmonton hype video of just kind of, you know, drab streets and freezing cold weather and piles of snow, maybe some shots of the West Edmonton Mall. And hey, this is what you're really getting if you come to
Edmonton. Wayne Gretzky statue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Listen, I don't want to dump on Edmonton too much. I have friends from there. It's a great town, but it was just bizarre that was how he chose to pitch it. Just things that have nothing to do whatsoever with Edmonton. And, you know, that kind of gets to our point about UBC is it's natural when, you know, the NHL is considering all these different cities, your hometown pride comes up a little bit and you want to point out all the reasons why you love your town and why it's such a great place to be. But yeah, a lot of those things won't really matter in this scenario. Having said that, you know, if Edmonton wants to make this about which is the most fun city, well, they're not going to win the competition because it's not Edmonton.
No, and even the most scenic city, right?
No, because, exactly.
Like, all of the shots that are beautiful mountain scenery are well outside of Edmonton. Whereas, you know, anybody that has ever lived in Vancouver knows you've got great mountain views anywhere that you are in the city pretty well. So, you know, to me, these bids are more, they need to be more about the details of things like the practice facility and ability to keep the players safe and within a bubble and provide them, you know, solid quality of life options outside of their, you know, game and practice time. So, you know, like one thing I had heard about the Edmonton bid that made sense was like a golf course that was only for the players so that on their off days, they would be able to go within their bubble to this golf course and golf. Like that side of it makes sense in terms of trying to get the PA on board. But really what needs to be highlighted in these bids, and, you know, it may be different behind closed doors than what we're seeing the Premier tweeting out in public. But if I'm, you know, trying to pitch Edmonton as a hub city, I'm focusing on, we've got a brand new state-of-the-art arena. It has two ice sheets in the facility. It is connected to all of the hotels that the teams are going to be staying at. So you don't even have to go outside to get to the rink. You're in a very small, like physically, it's a small bubble. Whereas in Vancouver, you know, sure, there's a lot of great hotels and things are going to be very good here. But at the same time, you know, it's not quite that compact. You're going to have to take a bus from the hotel to the rink. And certainly players are used to that. And that doesn't appear like it's going to be a problem, as we expect Vancouver to be named a hub city here. But to me, the thing that Edmonton has going for it is not beautiful mountain scenery that's 2 or 3 hours drive outside of the city. It's the fact that everything is very closely kept together, and, you know, it's a great facility for that with hotels that are right next door.
And that, all of those things you're mentioning are part of the reasons why we still expect Las Vegas to end up hosting one of the cities, because the nature of the hotels in Las Vegas is it's so easy to kind of shut it off and isolate the players. There's so many restaurants, there's pools, you know, some of them have golf courses attached to them. So the idea of keeping a contained bubble is probably why Las Vegas will end up getting one. And yeah, again, I don't want to rip on Edmonton too much. I'm sure they would do a great job if the NHL does decide to go that route. And it still wouldn't shock me, I will say, if the NHL decided to have both teams in or both cities in Canada. So I don't want to rule Edmonton out completely. It's just, in the totality of what they offer, I do think Vancouver, you know, despite some of the things you're mentioning where you have to drive around to different parts of the city for practice facilities and all of that, yeah, that's a bit of a drag, but the positives outweigh the negatives where Vancouver's concerned.
Well, yeah, and you know, it's still going to be safe. They're going to be on buses that are separated from the rest of the public. They're not going to be, it's not like because they have to go from downtown to UBC that they're going to be allowed to be out and about in the public eye.
So yeah,
it's not something where their bubble's going to be broken or they're going to be risking causing a spread in the general public either. So that's where we come at from the Vancouver bid perspective. Again, we do expect to learn by the end of the week what the hub cities in the National Hockey League are going to be. Let us know your thoughts. 650-650 is the text message inbox. We have a few texts in here. Unsigned here points out, as you were mentioning, Jamie, that UBC has already hosted games at the Olympics. So that's a good setup there for the practice facilities. Do you want Vancouver to be a hub city? We talked about this yesterday. Or would you rather it go somewhere else like Edmonton just so that the players aren't coming here to our province? Let us know, 650-650. Also want to get into the conversation around the Hockey Hall of Fame. As we'll learn tomorrow, the list of inductees in the 2020 class. And, you know, there are a few interesting names floating out there. Jerome Iginla is certainly someone that we expect to be, you know, inducted into the Hall of Fame this year. It seems to me that from reading speculation and hearing from people that everybody around the hockey world tends to agree that Jerome Iginla is deserving of going in this year. And even though Canuck fans might not have the fondest memories of the Flames and Jerome Iginla, you know, to me, growing up in Vancouver, he was still a player that you always had to respect and admire. And I would be really, really surprised if he's not part of the Hall of Fame class tomorrow.
Oh, it would be absolutely stunning. I expect him to get in no problem, be something close to unanimous, because I really don't know how you could look at his career, over 600 goals, 1,300 points. Yes, never won the Stanley Cup, but you can say that about a lot of great players at this point. And when you take into account just the longevity, the peak of his performance, his impact on the ice, and then also his international career, because let's not forget, you know, this isn't just the NHL Hall of Fame, it's the Hockey Hall of Fame. So won a couple of gold medals. We all remember how instrumental he was to the golden goal here in Vancouver. It's completely just an open and shut slam dunk case for me. And, you know, Ginla, it's interesting that you mentioned here in Vancouver, of course, of him being so synonymous with the Flames for so many years that we might not have the best feelings towards him. But Ginla was one of those players, for me, he transcended the rivalry. I've never really felt bad about Jerome Ginla. Yeah, you didn't like to see him do it against the Canucks, but there was always a base level of respect and appreciation for what he was able to do. And that, to me, just speaks to what an incredible career he had. That even having such a heated rivalry with the Calgary Flames, you know, it's like, yeah, but he's Jerome Ginla. He's amazing. I would be absolutely floored if he doesn't get in tomorrow.
Yeah, and, you know, if he didn't have that respect here in Vancouver, he certainly gained it, you know, Trevor Linden's last game in the league.
Yep.
And he led the Flames back out, and they all shook Linden's hand. So that's not really a conversation worth delving into too much, not to take anything away from Jerome Ginla, but, you know, we all agree Jerome Ginla should be in the Hall of Fame. He's going to go into the Hall of Fame. It's likely going to happen tomorrow. But the question I wanted to pose both to you, Jamie, and to the listeners is, who's the next guy on the list? Because it feels like Jerome Ginla is the lock this year. And then there is a crowded group of people just below that who all are deserving of going into the Hall of Fame, but all won't be able to go in this year. And some of the names on that list: Daniel Alfredson, Marian Hossa, Alexander Mogilny, Rod Brind'Amour. You could even throw Jeremy Roenick in there, Doug Wilson, Curtis Joseph. So we're asking you, text us 650-650, and I'll put this to you first, Jamie. After Jerome Ginla, who is your next guy that's got to be there this year for the Hockey Hall of Fame?
You know, I think it might not be any of the names you mentioned. I might go a little off the board and say Alexander Mogilny. And I know he's gotten more buzz over the last couple of cycles with the Hall of Fame, but he's been eligible for a while now. And with a guy like Mogilny, you know, he fell just short of even playing 1,000 games in the NHL, but he did have over 1,000 points, 473 goals. The statistical accomplishments are really impressive. And with Mogilny, the thing is, if you were going to knock him, you would say, well, he was so inconsistent. And that's true, but the highs were so high. And that's something that's really important to me is, well, how good were you at your peak? And Mogilny's peak, not a lot of players in hockey history have gotten there. Of course, we all know 76 goals in 77 games with the Sabres. That's an incredible achievement. And obviously, if that was just completely a one-off and he didn't have really much of another career to speak of, it would be a different story. But still, over 1,000 points, was productive for a long time in the NHL, played a big role on some playoff teams with the New Jersey Devils. So I look at the totality of his resume and I say, you know what? There are other good players who I would vote for sure, but a guy I'm really, really rooting for, I hope it's his time because I think he's waited long enough, is definitely Alex Mogilny.
Yeah, he's been eligible for like a decade, Never. Maybe just yeah. a little bit more, like 12 years, somewhere yeah. around that. And you look at his numbers, and it really is surprising to me that he's not there yet. And I guess it probably speaks to the quality of the era that he's a part of, that, you know, there were so many high point producing great players that came up through the 90s, and many of them are already in the Hockey Hall of Fame. But to me, and, you know, not to take anything away from a guy that is revered in this city, in Pavel Bure, who's already a member of the Hockey Hall of Fame, was a two-time 60-goal scorer. But to me, Alex Mogilny has a better case to be in the Hall of Fame than Pavel Bure, and Pavel Bure is already there. Bure didn't play as many games. He didn't have the high offensive highs that Mogilny had in terms of either goals or points. Mogilny had 127 points that season. He scored 76 goals. He had another 100-point season, of course, with the Canucks in 95-96 when he scored the 55 goals. So, you know, he's certainly a guy that I think deserves to be in, but I don't know if he's top on my list right now. And I'm going to go with Daniel Alfredson for mine, as a guy that, you know, over 1,200 games, almost 1,250 games, lots of longevity. It was pretty surprising that he didn't go in as a first ballot guy last year. And, you know, as much as we look at statistics and on-ice performance and all of those things, I think there should be weight put behind being the face of a franchise or someone that is synonymous with a particular team. You know, we talked about it with Jerome McGinley. You know, Jerome McGinley is Mr. Calgary Flame. Daniel Alfredson is Mr. Ottawa Senator. And, you know, to me, he deserves to go in. And this will kind of dovetail into an interesting conversation we'll have a little bit later with Ian McIntyre as it ties into the Vancouver Canucks. But, you know, to me, it's quite surprising that Daniel Alfredson didn't go in last year. And I think he's got to be there this year.
Yeah. And Daniel Alfredson, I agree with you that he should be in, no question about it. It really speaks to, I think, a couple things. First is how much the Hall of Fame voters value winning a Stanley Cup. Because another name that's eligible for the first time this year is Marian Hossa. And the word around hockey is that, you know, he'll get in pretty easily. And I have no problem with that. I like Hossa. I think he's a worthy player. But really, the only difference between Daniel Alfredson and Marian Hossa's careers from a statistical perspective is that Marian Hossa was eventually able to help the Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. And I don't want to downplay that because that is a meaningful accomplishment. But at the same time, you know, this is a team sport. It's not easy to win the Stanley Cup. And I find it odd to look at Daniel Alfredson's career and say, you know what, if one playoff series had gone differently and they had been able to beat the Ducks and win the Stanley Cup, then he's a no-doubt Hall of Famer. But because they lost that series, I don't know, I'm going to hold off on it. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me when you take into account everything else that he accomplished in his career. And I think we're going to see, though, that you know, the voters value those Stanley Cups so much that Hossa will go in, and I would not be surprised at all if Daniel Alfredson has to wait longer. You know, I don't want to rip on them too hard, but at the Athletic today, they did a kind of mock Hall of Fame panel where they voted, or they assembled, I think it was 18 of the writers there at the Athletic to vote on who should go into the Hall of Fame this year, and not a single one voted for Daniel Alfredson. So that just shows you the sentiment in the hockey world right now is not necessarily in Alfie's favor.
Yeah, well, and Marian Hossa is an interesting case too, because you know, you're right, the numbers are similar with Alfredson, but he's also a guy that had a really well-rounded game. Like, if you think about him at the peak of his career, he was one of the best, if not the best, two-way forwards in the entire league. That's not necessarily something that is quantifiable with traditional stats, though, in the same way that, you know, looking up straight goals and assists and points per game and things like that are. But yeah, Hossa, you know, may benefit from having played in a major American market too, right? Because, you know, especially if you look at the Athletic doing their thing, a lot of the people contributing to that are writers in the U.S. And Marian Hossa was on those Chicago Blackhawk teams who, you know, got a lot of coverage both when they were winning the Cup and they played a lot of national games on NBC down south as well. Whereas the Ottawa Senators are not that, you know, for lack of a better term, sexy team that was being played on NBC all the time or is being focused on by the American networks. So, you know, at least in the public perception, that probably plays a part in Marian Hossa as well. Whether it will play a part in the actual voting members choosing who goes into the Hockey Hall of Fame this year will be interesting to see.
Yeah, that's a really good point, I think, about the American market, because, again, I don't want to sound like I'm ripping on Marian Hossa. I think he's going to be very deserving if and when he does go into the Hall of Fame. But it's just surprising to see him regarded as a virtual lock in his first year being eligible, where someone like Daniel Alfredson, where, you know, if you had asked me when Daniel Alfredson retired, is Alfie a Hall of Famer? No question. Yeah, of course he is. And I find it strange how some players are made to wait. And, you know, we talked about it in the case of Alex McGillney, more than a decade of eligibility that he's had to wait. And, you know, typically those players do eventually go in, but it's just, you know, the Hall of Fame, they have their criteria and it doesn't always make sense. And it does look, unfortunately, like Alfredson will probably have to wait a little longer here.
We have a tweet in from Gord Locke on Twitter talking about Alexander McGillney lost his centerman after both his big years. LaFontaine was KO'd mostly after his 76 goals in Buffalo and then in Vancouver. They broke up Ronning and McGillney to close the year and let Ronning walk. So, you know, maybe that's a case that he could have had even more points had had he had a chance to play with the guys that he had played with longer term. Keep the texts and the tweets coming. 650, 650 is the text message inbox, at Batch Hockey, at Jamie Dodd, at Sportsnet 650 on Twitter. We'll get into this conversation on the Hockey Hall of Fame and a lot more with Sportsnet's Ian McIntyre in just a matter of moments. It is Social Distance Central on the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, Sportsnet 650. There's that music. You know what that means. We're going to be joined by Sportsnet's triple threat, Ian McIntyre, here in a matter of minutes to get into all the topics around the hockey world today, from the narrowing down of hub cities with Vancouver remaining on the list to Hockey Hall of Fame eligibility and a whole lot more as well. And Jamie, this is a conversation we're going to put to IMAC when we get him on here in a couple of minutes. But we were talking about Daniel Alfredson and his candidacy for the Hockey Hall of Fame before the break, and wondering whether he's going to have to wait a few years to get in. Alex McGillney is a guy that has had to wait for a decade or more. But when you look at Daniel Alfredson, one thing that jumps out at me is that his career numbers are awfully similar to a couple of guys that we know quite well here in this city, in Daniel and Henrik Sedin. And it brings up the question, and it sounds crazy to ask it, and I know you guys are going to get into this in depth on Reach Deep this afternoon as well, but are Daniel and Henrik Sedin going to be first ballot Hall of Famers? If you had asked me that, you know, when they were retiring, or even, you know, before I had done a little bit of research on this, I would have said, oh yeah, of course, they have to be first ballot Hall of Famers. Look at what they meant to this organization. Look at their careers. And yet you wonder when you see a guy like Daniel Alfredson get passed over in his first year and maybe get passed over in a second year as well.
It is one of those things, like you said, it to us here in Vancouver and who watched the Sedins for their entire career, it feels just like an absolute no-brainer. But, you know, their statistical profile, you know, Daniel Alfredson, you could argue, has a better profile than just purely based on the numbers than either the Sedins, because I think we kind of forget, you know, the Sedins were, it took them a while to really get going in the NHL. And so that kind of brings their point per game for their career number down quite a bit. The advantage the Sedins have over Alfredson is, well, for Henrik, that he won the Hart and of course the Art Ross. Daniel won the Art Ross as well. That is, you know, Alfredson never did that. He was never the best player in the league, and the Sedins for at least two or three seasons were right there, either the best player in the league or among the very, very, you know, on the small list of the best players in the league. So that is an advantage they have, but I'm kind of gearing myself up here for, because it's a lot of the same things as Alfredson, you know, didn't play in an American market. Yes, they got a lot of, you know, high profile attention during the 2011 Cup run, but does that work against them? Because we know how so many people from outside Vancouver feel about that this team. And I'm kind of gearing myself up to say that the Sedins will have to wait a little bit. I don't like it. I think it's absolutely the wrong decision, but I think that could be where we're headed here.
Well, and another part of the conversation too is what you brought up with Alfredson earlier in the show, that never won a Stanley Cup, you know, excuse or reasoning behind why a guy like Marian Hossa might go in this year as opposed to someone like Daniel Alfredson. And the Sedins are very similar as well. They got to the Stanley Cup final. They got all the way to game seven. Alfredson, of course, got to the finals as well with the Ottawa Senators. But, you know, we touched on it briefly. It does seem, you know, very off base to me to punish guys that had great careers just based on the fact that, you know, in the Sedins case, you know, they win one game. And it's a completely different conversation we're having about their careers in all likelihood.
Yeah, and for something that is a career, you know, it's supposed to assess your entire career going into the Hall of Fame. Yeah, like you said, to completely change your decision based on one game, I don't get that. That doesn't make sense to me.
It is Social Distance Central, Brendan Batchelor and Jamie Dodd with you. Going to be joined by Sportsnet's Ian McIntyre here in just a couple of minutes. The Hub City conversation, front of mind today as well. And Game of Takes this week is on Tyler Myers. We'll get IMAX thoughts on Myers' impact to the Canucks in his first season. Again, we are still submitting or accepting your submissions for Game of Takes. You can get at us on Twitter, send a text into the inbox as well. And your thoughts on Tyler Myers. We've already had a lot of differing opinions on this topic, Jamie, when it comes to a guy like Tyler Myers, where there are people that really can't seem to separate the player and what he was able to do in his first year from the contract that he was signed to.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see how Game of Takes develops this week and to when we eventually get our competitors on the air, because this is a topic and a player that, you know, fans are very passionate about, and there's a lot of strong feelings on both sides. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, Batch, and yeah, the focus on the contract is understandable, but when you're just assessing him based on this season, it's also kind of beside the point. And that we've had a lot of conversation about the contract and how unhappy people are with the contract. Again, I get it, but you know, that doesn't mean he wasn't an effective player for the Canucks this season.
And we're joined now by Sportsnet's Ian McIntyre. IMac, thanks for taking the time out today. We appreciate it. And we want to start by talking about Tyler Myers, which is a topic we're focusing on the show this week. When it comes to his first season in a Canuck uniform and the impact he had on the Canuck back end, I think it's fair to say that Quinn Hughes gets a lot of praise, and rightfully so, for some of the improvements that the Canucks blue line saw. But what did you think of Tyler Myers' first year and the impact he was able to have as well?
I thought it was pretty solid. I think Tyler Myers made and makes the Canucks better. And although they're, you know, especially if you were looking strictly at his analytics from his time in Winnipeg and what his strengths and weaknesses were, I think there were a lot of people who thought that Tyler Myers, under no circumstances, would make the Canucks better, and I think he did. The question to me with Tyler, as it is with most players that you go out and sign, is just, you know, what is going to be the long term return for what you are paying him, and in the end, is it going to be seen as a prudent contract or not? But again, with so many players, I know this is impossible to do in this age, but if you separate the salary and from the player and just judge the performance of him and how the team was when he was on the ice, I don't think there's any doubt that Tyler Myers helped the Canucks this year. He certainly helps them move the puck out of their zone. He plays in a lot of situations, you know, power play and PK, and he has a lot of even strength minutes. He played with different players as well, so he's shown a versatility there, and obviously he tends to skew better when he's playing with better players than if he's playing with a third pairing guy, for lack of a better term. But I, you know, in my mind, there's no doubt he helped the Canucks and will continue to help them.
Well, and it's an interesting point you bring up about him playing well with better players. It did seem like with Quinn Hughes, he had some success this year, and that kind of runs contrary to what we thought was going to be the best fit for Quinn Hughes, which was a more defensive type defenseman like Chris Tanev. But Myers' ability to play with Hughes, what does that do for the Canucks going forward in the sense that, you know, does it make them more free to move away from a guy like Tanev because you have a guy like Myers under contract for the next four seasons that can play in that role?
Well, it certainly helps, Brendan. If you don't have, you know, depth at any position, it really limits your choices. And luckily the Canucks have Myers on the right side, but you know, he's really the only guarantee with the right side, because there's questions about Tanev, who's a UFA. There's questions about Troy Stetcher, just because of his role on the team and what it will cost to keep him, or at least before the world turned upside down the last 3 months, you know, what it was going to cost to keep him. So it's nice to have that certainty. But the team also, let's remember, they're not in a position now to step back. They were a much better team this year than they were last year, and probably their improvement in the standings doesn't fully reflect how much better a team the Canucks are. But they want to be better again next year and the year after that, and understandably so, because they have these cornerstone players like Pettersson and Hughes, and they still have Horvat under contract. They've got at least two more years of Brock Besser. They should be able to do some kind of deal with Jacob Markstrom and keep their MVP and starting goalie. So now is the time for them really to push forward and try to win something. And if you're subtracting a better player because you feel like a better player than the guy who's going to replace him, because you feel like, well, we have other good players at that position. Well, that's true, but it doesn't necessarily make you better. So my very long-winded point is, yes, it helps to have depth. It helps to have a player like Tyler Myers that you know can play on the right side for the next few seasons. But, you know, Chris Tanev still helps this team. Troy Stetcher still helps this team. Now, who's out there to replace them if they're not back? Well, I mean, who knows? It should be a historical market this summer, or this off season, I should say, whenever that is, for teams looking to add players. But everyone's under such incredible restrictions, salary cap wise, that it's hard. And so I think the Canucks have to do the best they can to try to keep as many of their good players now, because, you know, if you move away from Chris Tanev, well, who's replacing him? And maybe you replace him equally, but maybe it's a player who's still developing and might be as good as Chris Tanev was, but might not be that as good as he is next season. So they have to be careful.
Ian, Batch and I were talking about the Hockey Hall of Fame, and we're expecting to learn this year's inductees tomorrow. And looking ahead to next year, when the Sedins will be eligible, you know, you look at a player like Daniel Alfredsson, whose resume is very comparable to Henrik and Daniel and the numbers they put up throughout the course of their career. But it seems like, you know, Alfredsson will have to, he's waited a couple years and he might have to wait again to hear his name called. You know, for us in Vancouver, I think a lot of fans and people in the media even kind of thought that the Sedins would be first ballot Hall of Famers when their time came. Do you still expect that to be the case, or do you think that Henrik and Daniel might have to wait a few years to receive the honor?
Well, they might have to wait one or two. I mean, I think they're Hall of Fame players, and I've never qualified that, you know, first ballot or within 3 years. I just think they're going to be Hall of Fame players. You know, the challenge, though, and there's always so much gray area in balloting, and it's that way whether you're choosing major award winners for the National Hockey League, like we in the Professional Hockey Writers Association do, or whether, you know, the highest honor you can have individually to go to the Hockey Hall of Fame. You know, there's so much subjectivity in that as well. It's just, you cannot ever, I don't think you can ever reduce it to simply a statistical argument. And that is why I've always felt that the Sedins are going to, they should be viewed beyond their statistics, because there's never been there's never been identical twins in the National Hockey League who, as a unit, spent their entire careers with one team and did what they did. I mean, their numbers, yes, they're comparable to Daniel Alfredsson, but there's two of them. And does that make them better players? No, it didn't make them better players, but it makes them more exceptional. And part of the Hall of Fame is recognizing exceptional players, and we've seen that, you know, with some players added in recent years from the former Soviet Union. We should see it more in players added for diversity and you know, possibly how they changed the game. And so there is so many other things that go into it than just the numbers. And the Sedin's numbers are very good, but I don't think that's only why they should be Hall of Fame players. I just think their story and what they accomplished together as brothers in the National Hockey League is goes into a lot of the argument for why they should be Hall of Famers.
I think that's really well said, iMac. I always look at the Hall of Fame as part of its job is to tell the story of hockey and the NHL. And to your point, you know, they're a unique case across professional sports of identical twins, you know, accomplishing what they did for one team in one city for so long. So I think that's a really well-stated case for the Sedins. Are there any other players who have been kind of sitting on the Hall of Fame bubble for a while now that you look at and think, hey, that guy should probably get in one of these days? Batch and I were talking earlier in the show about Alex McGillney, and to your point, you know, yeah, okay, if the numbers, there are other players with his numbers, but he was an exceptional player, 76 goals. There's very few people who can say that. Is it, whether it's McGillney or someone else, is there another player who you look at and say, yeah, this guy's time has come, he should probably get in?
Well, I think McGillney is an interesting case, partly for what you know, I just said about the Sedins, that he's in exceptional circumstances. If I'm not mistaken, he was the last player to defect, and I'm trying to think if Fedorov was Fedorov the year before or the year after. But you know, McGillney came from behind the Iron Curtain and basically fled from his country and left behind everything he had to come to the NHL. And you know, then the wall came down and there was a dam burst. Suddenly there was, you know, a pile of Russian and Eastern European players who were good enough to play in the NHL. But McGillney was still, I don't want to say a trailblazer, because the Berlin Wall and the end of the East Bloc, as it used to be called, was obviously not predicated on sports athletes. But I do think it reflected kind of a certain period in our history. So, I mean, that's all a footnote, but I think it's part of the story to Alex McGillney. And then if you look at it statistically, I mean, the 76 goals, it was astounding, but he was just such a gifted player. And you know, in the end, his career, you know, he had injuries, a lot of injuries. In the end, he played, didn't quite make it to 1,000 games, but he had over a point a game. He was as good a player as Pavel Bure, but Pavel was just such a spectacular scorer. Like, Pavel was the kind of players that people would buy tickets for just to see and cheer for. And I'm not sure McGillney was quite the same way. But I also think that he was one of the best players of his time in the NHL when there were, you know, and the NHL, as it continues to evolve and expand, there's more and more great players in the league at one time. Each generation is better than the previous one. So for me, does Alex McGillney deserve to be in the Hockey Hall of Fame? Yeah, I would say he does.
Sportsnet's Ian McIntyre with us for a couple more minutes here on Sportsnet 650. Also want to get your thoughts on the Hub City discussion, iMac. Things seem to be narrowed down. We hear that Pittsburgh and Dallas are out of the running today. The Canucks and Vancouver, I should say, remains on that short list. And it sounds like Vancouver's a front runner to be hosting some playoff games here next month and beyond. What are your thoughts on A, Vancouver's case as a hub city, and B, whether you want the NHL here as a BC resident?
Well, I don't think it's poses a safety risk. So let me say that first, because I've seen it suggested maybe this isn't a good thing to have travelers, in air quotes, coming to Canada during this time. But I also firmly believe that the NHL and provincial health authorities, and all you need to do is look at the kind of credibility and respect that Dr. Bonnie Henry has earned in the last few months, to know that BC isn't going to allow things that are unsafe. So there's no safety risk to me to having here. I also think probably the economics of it are probably a little overstated. Like, in the big scheme of things, it's not a whole lot. Yes, it helps some retail establishments. Yes, it'll help a very select few hotels, but I think it's more, of a morale boost and just feeling good about your city that the NHL might choose to come here and play. I know that's, it's a huge thing now, it seems, for Edmonton. It's almost like a referendum on their value as a city and what they think of themselves as to whether the NHL likes them too. I don't think it's quite that way to Vancouver, but I think Vancouver would be a very good hub from what I can tell. And the biggest thing it has going for them is that this is one of the safest places in the world. Among populations of 5 million or more, BC has the lowest death rate in North America and Europe. And, that is commendable, and that reflects how responsible the leadership has been, but it also reflects how responsible and caring we have been, citizens, respecting each other's and doing what we have to stay healthy. And that has gotten a lot of notice, and not just from the NHL, but that's why the NHL is considering Vancouver. A week ago, the word on the street was that Toronto was almost a done deal, and when the Prime Minister, I think it was on Thursday or last Wednesday, made his comment that he would support the NHL coming here as long as it's done with the support of provincial health authorities and provincial guidelines, it seemed like, it was a matter of time until they announced Toronto. But Toronto hasn't done as well with COVID as what BC has done. And that's the phrasing of that is probably unfair, because I don't live in Toronto, so I don't know how what people there have done. But, the numbers here clearly are better, and the numbers in Toronto continue to be a bit of a concern. Although they're stable, they're not as low as a lot of people would like. And that's why Toronto in Ontario is still in the phase one of their reopening plans, the GTA, whereas a lot of the province has moved beyond that first initial stage. So there's a lot to like about Vancouver. There's a lot to like about Edmonton. Honestly, I'm not sure why Las Vegas seems to be this quasi-automatic choice as one of the hubs, given what numbers we're seeing for COVID in the United States, and especially in some of the Sun Belt states. But I think Vancouver does have an excellent chance to get it, and I think it would be a good, safe choice. And then we'll just see what happens after that.
Yeah, we should find out by the end of the week here. Ian, thanks for the time today. Appreciate it, and we'll chat again soon.
Sorry about that. I just about ran out the clock with that one rambling answer.
Don't apologize.
No, it's all good. Thanks, Ian.
See you, guys. Ian.
There you go. That's Sportsnet's Ian McIntyre. And he's right. We are up against the clock here. Jamie, you're going to be back in just a moment with Dan Riccio on Reach Deep. What do you guys have coming up on the show today?
Well, we got a great show coming up. Ben Nicholson-Smith, Sportsnet baseball writer, is going to join us to talk a little bit about how we might actually have a baseball season this year. Switching things up a little too, Shane O'Brien normally joins the show on Wednesdays. He's going to chat with us today at 2, and then Michael Tracos, national NHL writer for Post Media, will talk some Hockey Hall of Fame with us at 3, so it should be a good one.
And that is coming up in a matter of moments. Reach Deep with Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd. This has been Social Distance Central. We'll be back on the air at noon tomorrow, right here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.